Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You know, all of us at times have felt dismayed and frustrated, even embarrassed when our memories have failed us. Our memory is flexible. It's prone to many errors, which is why eyewitness testimony has been found to be largely unreliable. And there are several reasons why forgetting occurs. Sometimes it might be to help us deal with this crazy world, make sense of the world. Forgetting is something that we all do. But can this power of forgetting or editing our memories be used to help us? We're talking about the power of forgetting, memory suppression research this afternoon. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. It's part of the Mind Science Foundation. They're doing a brainstorm neuroscience pitch competition. That's going to be tomorrow at the Pearl Stables Historic Pearl Brewery, free to attend for Mind Science Foundation members. So let's talk to our guest. We've got Michael Anderson with us. He's professor at the University of Cambridge, a member of the Memory Research Group, and also with us is Subbu Sankara Subbu-Maniam. She is a graduate student at the MRC Cognition and Brain Science Unit at the University of Cambridge. Welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you both here with today to talk about this fascinating topic about memory. And so, Subbu, tell me about why this topic is so important, that people have these false impressions about what their memory is actually all about.
Yeah, thanks, David. Yeah, you gave a great introduction. So yeah, in general, people tend to think that forgetting is bad. It's something which shouldn't be done or something. But if you actually were to think about it, in this world, the way we live in, it is better that we forget some things. And it makes our life so much better if we were to forget things that we'd rather not remember. So I feel that motivated forgetting that we research on is an important phenomenon and people should understand about that.
So what is something that I would be motivated to forget?
Think of incidents which are painful to you, which are extremely traumatic sometimes, which are unpleasant. So our brain inherently tries to make us forget such things so that we are not continuously being pained by those memories recurring again and again.
So we hear Michael Anderson always talked about when you're a little kid and you put your finger in the flame and you realize, holy cow, that hurts. And so your memory tells you, don't do that again. And so and then sometimes you see someone else do that and you see them getting hurt and you have modeled learning and you don't do that yourself. But there's a good reason why you remember stuff.
Absolutely. You have to learn from the lessons of experience. You don't want to forget all the terrible things that have happened to you. But there's a great deal of things that happen to us that are unpleasant, that are simply not worth remembering, and sometimes maladaptive to remember. So I think a really good example is if you are striving to achieve something, for example. A person can be really hindered by memories of past failures. And causing them to choke and causing them to not be able to mount the effort necessary to achieve something new. So to the extent that you cannot be dominated by memories of your past, you can adjust and succeed. Another example would be if you've had an argument with your partner or somebody that you care about. You're very motivated to have good feelings about that person. You want to get over it. And to the extent that you can't get over it, it's actually very undermining to your relationship in the long run if you're constantly dwelling on that.
So there are people who are haunted by memories, crippled by memories. Yeah. It's a part of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that they went through a traumatic experience and they would love to move on, but this is something that because of the brain, where the brain works, this is like right up front and center stage, spotlight within the hippocampus. You're not going to be able to move past it. So is this the kind of research that we can take a memory like that, that's at 11, and dial it back down to a 2 or a 3, so it's not like completely forgotten, but this is not like the defining moment of my life? Subbu?
Yes, that was greatly put. That is something that we do try to do, yes. So especially like if we can bring down the emotional impact of such things which people keep dwelling on, if you can reduce the emotional impact, I think that would be great for them so that they can move on and they can maybe take something constructive from the memory, but not be defined by the memory, as you put it.
And so through your research, are we talking about doing this through pharmaceuticals, talk therapy, cognition, behavioral therapy? What are you talking about doing? How do you do that?
Yeah, those are all ways of achieving that. What I and we are like currently looking at is looking at non-invasive brain stimulation techniques and seeing how those could be used for our purposes.
Well, like what, taking a magnet and putting it by your head?
Mm-hmm. That is very apt in some sense. We do put a magnetic coil on your scalp and we try to stimulate non-invasively and see how we produce like changes in the brain temporarily. And we are looking at how that could also be leading to long-lasting changes.
So are you talking about like, there's two ways of doing that. One of them is with a big magnet that you put in the back of the head and suddenly you can't see anything anymore, and because that's where your optic stuffs are. Mm-hmm. And then there's other stuff where it's like really low-level type magnets that you put in around the head in certain places. Which way are all of this? You're still trying to figure it out?
So we are trying to use TMS, which is transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Okay.
So you essentially have a current carrying conductor, it's a coil, and it's very focal, and you place it on the scalp, and the current in the coil varies, and so the amount of magnetic change is going to be huge, but it's not going to be but the magnetic fields themselves aren't great enough. So
sure, it has kind of the impact of having a stimulant on the brain.
Yes. Yeah,
okay. It can be used to interrupt functioning of a brain area or to enhance it.
Sure, depending on how high you dial it up.
On the frequency that you stimulate.
Yeah, protocol that we use, basically.
Okay, so how many people do you think would benefit from this type of technology, being able to deal with, I'm thinking of like editing of the brain or selective amnesia or censoring of your your harmful memories? What are we talking, how do you define it?
Censoring of harmful memories, sounds like a good definition.
Although I think I like the way that you put it before, to dial it down.
Yes.
So we've recently shown that that the process of suppressing an intrusive memory, when done successfully, actually makes you feel less upset about it, and also makes your memory a little less detailed and vivid. That seems like a happy compromise, being able to remember that something happened, but not have the intensive, intrusive imagery that makes you very upset.
Are you able to use animal models in your experiments or research, looking at animals who have gone through, like a rat running a maze looking at their memories? I mean, I know there's pretty sophisticated ways to analyze how rats are processing their own brain.
We are looking at animal models as well. Like, there is an ongoing strands of research which are looking at how animals can also show such forms of forgetting. Mm-hmm. And but TMS, the one good thing is it can be used on humans. It has been used. It's a safe technology, and so it can be directly applicable to humans. So the main point of my study would be with human volunteers, but animal models are also the way to go to build up a proper
mechanistic understanding.
So we had recently, we've been talking about memory a lot in the United States because of a Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, and questions about traumatic memories that Professor Ford has experienced when she was a teenager in his presence. And a lot of people have been trying to pick apart her testimony that she gave last week based upon, the way the memory works. I don't know, have you been following this whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying that she gave almost like a class on talking about the way the memory works and how when you're in this hyper-aroused state, aroused in a very, I'm saying it in a way that you're highly excited, not, sexually attracted, you're aroused you're in a hyper state, that you are cementing memories into that are definitely hard. That's what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is that what you see?
Yes, like traumatic experiences, traumatic memories. In that sense, yes, they could be cemented in your brain, and they could be very intrusive. They can keep, and over the years, the intrusions can still remain, remain without reducing for some people. And so the details of the memory still remain intact in some sense.
There's actually, what you're referring to is the fact that emotionally intense experiences leads to an interaction between different brain structures to enhance the retention of the memory to make it very, burnt in, as people say. But at the same time, research also shows that if you ask in terms of what people remember of their life experiences, if you ask people to retrospectively remember events from their life, those retrospective recalls are dominated by positive and neutral memories with a minority of negative memories. Even when you specifically ask people about negative memories, they're harder to recall. So I think that there's something that happens in between the initial formation of an intense experience and how you regulate your emotions in the long term after that, that tunes those things down. Maybe you remember the essence of the memory intensely in certain key images of it, but then your memory might develop, become more fragmentary, and you might develop holes in the memory.
Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
And so someone who's gone through a long period of traumatic events, maybe they went through a household that was just helter-skelter all the time. Some people can't remember entire years of their lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we'll talk about how memory and trauma and moving forward, trying to get to a healing place, dialing down some of these really harsh, traumatic memories that people have. What can be done about that? Why science is looking at this in ways it can be a therapy for individuals. If you got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. If you could make yourself forget some memories, would you do it? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin. Davies. Amnesia, it's a trope that we see in soap operas all the time. Some guy get knocked in the head and he forgot who he was. But amnesia actually is a thing, whether it's brain trauma or disease, some way that we have a failure of encoding memories into us. But then there's also what we do when we kind of selectively figure out, I'm not going to remember the time that thing happened to me. Why is that? And that could be a good thing. It helps people function. We can't remember every little detail in our lives, but can we use that mechanism as a therapy to help us deal with some really horrific things that we have seen, whether it's in our personal lives or in military, all sorts of stuff? It's a tough world out there. So should we figure out ways to help us deal with that? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. I'm talking with two experts who are dealing with memory suppression research. If you could suppress a memory, would you? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. So Subbu, you're a graduate student at the MRC Cognition and Brain Science Unit at the University of Cambridge. Tell us about how you see this technology or research being put into place. How would it help people?
Yeah, it is exactly as you said. So there's a tough world out there, and rather sadly, many people get to face things, horrific things, and sometimes they have to live with that. And so if we can actually go out there and help people function better, that would be the ultimate objective of my project. So yeah, it could be war veterans, it could be victims of various disasters or personal trauma. So and all of them who keep facing intrusive memories, and they'd rather not dwell on those, but they'd like to move on. So if we could actually translate this technology to a long-term protocol which could help these people function better, become better at controlling their harmful thoughts and memories.
So a person who has a panic disorder, they had a panic attack. And if anyone who's ever had a panic attack, you will know this is no kidding thing. You are just in total freak out mode. You actually think you are going to die. And then you spend the rest of your life in fear of having that experience again. Just a fear of having a panic. And then you will associate that panic with, I was in this car at that time. I'm never going to get back into that car. And you're going to think, I was in a car. I'm not going to get back into any car, or whatever. And you start just it is a disabling condition. Do you think having something like this to deal with that moment of panic, helping people dial that down and realize that doesn't have to be a life-ending episode, that your technology can help, this research can help people get back to life?
Yes. So a panic attack is not just about that attack. So once an attack occurs, the memory of that attack now serves as a huge roadblock in some sense.
It's always hanging right over their head.
Yes. So it's like that memory, which is now like making you scared of everything which is associated with that memory, and which could be very disabling, as you said. So if we could dial down the emotional impact of that memory of that particular attack, that would obviously help people move on. And yeah.
And Michael Anderson, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, basically, I think it's two potential benefits of doing this brain stimulation. If we can show that stimulating this key area of the brain that we have in mind improves people's ability to control their thoughts and to control their memories, I think it would have two benefits. One would be the actual improvement in the mechanism itself and the ability to make the thoughts go away when you need to. But the second benefit is confidence. It's the ability, the awareness that one is not necessarily going to be dominated by these intrusive thoughts and memories when they do occur, and the confidence that you can deal with them. And so I think that could really be beneficial in tandem with, say, a cognitive behavioral therapy. So to put the two of them together.
Let's go to the caller. This is Tanya. Tanya, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I was calling in just on that last point that you made. I don't know that I would so much want to suppress or remove a bad memory or experience so much as I would want to do, counseling work, therapy work to actually overcome it in that way instead of through, brain stimulation type techniques. I just feel like that would be better able to overcome it, if in a way, than you just used some kind of stimulation on the brain.
Right. Tanya, thank you so much. You make a lot of sense there. People associate their self with their memories, and they are afraid that if I have a memory that's going to be eliminated or erased somehow, that I am somehow now less than. But that's not really what you're talking about, is it, Subbu?
It is not. Yeah. It is a fair point that people might think. Yeah. Because everybody thinks that we are in some sense defined by our memories. But we are not looking to erase memories per se. We are trying to reduce the emotional impact and their intrusive recurrence so that people can focus on the present rather than dwelling on the past. And they can, of course, take constructive things from their past, but they should be able to move on and they should live in the present rather than being impounded by these thoughts from the past.
Every new development, there's upside and a downside. Is there the ability for some sort of this to be abused somehow? Mm-hmm. If you got this superpower, will you always use it for good? I mean, could someone say, I'm going to take all your memories of some horrible event and suddenly downplay it so that people won't realize a horrible thing happened and they can get away with it?
I do think we have to be careful about the ethical implications of this kind of work. Absolutely.
It's human to think of evil things with whatever new developments
someone will think of it.
So the ethical implications, this is how I perceived the events. And they are true and to me, and to come in and begin to start editing my my memories of my memory, is that have an ethical implication?
Well, certainly you can construe brainwashing, this idea of brainwashing somebody about a certain, what happened in a certain event, as being a form of trying to control somebody's memory. And so that's kind of the taking it to the extreme of the negative use of this kind of technology, this kind of intervention.
So, but we're talking about not using a pharmaceutical approach, but there are pharmaceuticals that are being discussed out there that can improve people's memories and also you can and reduce certain memories as well. And so that's out there. So there's a multidisciplinary approach to this one problem of helping the brain forget traumatic events.
Yes, that's true.
And so what's going to have the most practical application? I mean, we love our pharmaceuticals. You know, it's like, here's a pill. You're going to forget all about that, you know, or sit down, talk, put this weird cap on your head. We're going to run some volts through it and talk about what happened to you. And when we're done, you're going to feel a lot better. Is that how that would work?
I think a multidisciplinary approach to science itself is good. And yeah, I feel that essentially we'll have to like come up with a mechanistic basic science model, which would be effectively helpful for most people. Because right now, we are not sure how many pharmaceutical interventions, we are not actually sure how it works. We are not sure what are the pathways, not completely in most cases. So yeah, if we can actually bring about and figure out a proper mechanistic model, and then we can then, depending on the need, we can always translate it.
So I just want to emphasize that we are going down the pharmacological route as well. So we recently published work showing the importance of a certain neurotransmitter, GABA, in the hippocampus. The more of this neurotransmitter you have in the hippocampus, the better you are at forgetting. It actually, some people are really good at this kind of motivated forgetting and others are not. And so, you know, maybe drugs that facilitate GABA production could enhance one's natural ability to forget.
So they say ignorance is bliss. And so if you can't remember any of the horrible things that happened to you, you're going to be walking around like a grinning idiot, I guess. I mean, that seems like they could be taken to the extreme. Every time it's like, well, that plane ride was not good. I'd rather not remember it.
Well, certainly, I think people do want to be happy, right? They don't enjoy being sad, being angry, being in any variety of negative emotional states. And if intrusive memories and intrusive thoughts undermine that state, what people just naturally do is they try to make that stuff go away and get themselves back into balance. And all we're suggesting is that some people aren't as good as they would like to be at that, and it's very bad for their lives.
Yeah, if it's affecting their ability to function normally, then an intervention is needed.
Yeah.
And you're looking at a natural function of the brain to help people cope with the day-to-day and living in the Serengeti with lions and things attacking the tribe at any given moment. We got to be able to figure out how can we deal with the daily terrors and still get up in the morning and face the day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you that I get emails from people, from the general public, quite a lot. And I've gotten some dramatic cases of people telling me that, please help me. I cannot stop thinking about this thing for 3 or 4 years now. Every single day, it's ruining my life. Begging me for a way to... They've tried accepting it. Right. They've tried reflecting on it.
And so the development of this technology will be, for those people, a lifesaver.
Yeah.
All right. And these are ideas that will be presented at the Mind Science Foundation's Brainstorm Neuroscience Pitch Competition. It's tomorrow at the Pearl Stables. It's free to attend for Mind Science Foundation members. Michael Anderson and Subbu, thank you all so much for being here this afternoon. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.